Okay, now we can move into item number 13, Commission's Position Statement, Wolves in Washington. This is a briefing and a commission discussion period. So,
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Jennings?
So, at our last commission meeting, we had a draft position paper. In the interim between last commission meeting and this meeting, three of us have provided a significant number of comments to that draft. Those comments are reflected in the document, in our packet, as draft version DJ, and then Commissioner Perry's suggested changes. I've taken working with Commissioner Schmitten and Commissioner Perry to incorporate those three sets of suggested edits into a single document. And the thought was that we have an updated copy to pass out to folks of that and then sort of walk through it on the screen and make suggested changes. My suggestion is that we pass those documents out and give you about 5 minutes to read through them and then sort of walk through those changes and identify any additional edits or concerns in the drafts.
Excellent. Thank you.
Let's
take 5 minutes then. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, just to clarify what we're doing, 5 minutes for everyone to read this. That'll be till 25-2. And then we're going to hear an update from staff, a lengthier update on the status of wolves, because there wasn't enough time yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that was part of this discussion.
And then, but it doesn't matter which order we do this in. This is extremely helpful. Thank you, Commissioner Jennings.
Oh, on the desktop.
Statement, which I totally agree with, but I could see someone saying if we try to do this zone approach separately, that like you've already agreed, you've established your objectives for down the state.
I'm happy to have that discussion.
No. I think it's premature to even indicate that we're talking about that, but I was wondering.
Yeah, my copy is missing a page.
Oh, it looks like page four didn't get. Four.
Yeah, page four is missing.
Yes. This was done very rapidly this morning, so I.
Yeah, that's, you did an admirable job. What's that?
The italicized, is this your font from your machine?
No, I think in the original draft from last month, some paragraphs had been italicized. So if we want to not italicize them, I'm happy to. I just didn't.
I don't see that they have enough special meaning to make this say.
Right.
We keep the same form all the way through.
Yeah.
Engage, assuming that this passes, in the discussion about how to circulate its use, how the outreach, how to support this document to the next step. Not until we go through it all.
Do commissioners need more time? We'll be walking through this, so let's just get going. And in recognition that some member of the public may want to provide their input before our work session, or after we get done with this, we will move our open public input into up so that those of you who want to leave and don't want to listen to our work session can do that. Okay, so let's start at the beginning and work through the document. And we don't expect, we won't be taking action on this today, so we'll just be writing down comments and then revising this as needed for final consideration at the next meeting. Okay, this is the page that was missing.
I think we're getting a briefing from the department first. Are we getting a briefing from the department before we jump into this document?
Yeah, that'd be good. Let's hear the update from the department.
Well, good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Director Anderson. My name is Steve Pizangra. I'm the Regional Director out of the Spokane office for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and here to present you with an update on a variety of activities in the wolf conservation and management arena. We didn't think that including a short update within the Director's Report yesterday would really do the topic justice. And so we had asked for some additional time to be able to provide an update to you on a variety of activities. And hopefully, over the course of time, if we keep the lines of communication open and frequent on this topic, that you'll get sick of me. And if that happens, that means I'm doing a good job. First, let me talk just briefly about Director Anderson's shift within the department relative to placing a high priority on wolf conservation and management activities post-adoption of the wolf plan. There are a number of pieces associated that with that reprioritization and effort, one of which was Phil asking me to take the lead for the state on the wolf plan implementation. And so with that, and with a host of very excited staff, and I really do mean that, we have hit the ground running. So I'm going to start with an overview on a variety of activities, starting first at the national level and then drilling down literally to some boots-on-the-ground activity within the last week involving wolves right here in Washington. This is largely narrative, and so the pretty picture will stay up on the screen for quite some time until we get to a portion where I'm going to share some of the new data sources and new information, and I'll refer to a series of slides at that point. So with that, I'd start at the national level first. Some of this will be slightly repetitive from some of the information that Director Anderson provided yesterday, but I hope that there's more detail here. And as always with my presentations, I like a dialogue. And so if questions come up in your mind as I'm covering a topic, I'm happy to answer those as they come up. So in May of last year, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service initiated a five-year status review in conjunction with a proposal to revise the listing associated with the eastern wolf. And at that time, the service decided to broaden the five-year review to look at the whole listed entity for the gray wolf in the lower 48 states. That information was released last week by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and within that, without covering all the details, specific to the Pacific Northwest situation, the service announced a continuation of a specific status review for the Pacific Northwest to evaluate whether the area is a listable entity or a distinct population segment. This is expected to be complete by September 30th of 2012. And Assistant Director Pamplin and I have had a discussion, and one of the things that we're on point to make sure happens is that we keep the services feet to the fire, if you will, relative to meeting that timeline. Until that review is complete, the recommendation by the service is to keep the federal listed status as endangered in the western two-thirds of Washington. So there would be no change in the interim. Just a couple of thoughts. I'm not trying to presuppose
Madam
where
Chair.
This...
Sorry.
Commissioner Jennings.
Taking you up on your offer.
Yes.
So they're maintaining the endangered status for the western two-thirds of Washington at least through to September.
Correct.
And there's potential in September that they would be able to make a decision and either change that to threatened or include that as a Rocky Mountain DPS or some other management decision.
Right. And so there's a host of potential scenarios that would play out post September 30 within their findings associated with the DPS evaluation. And I actually, that was my next good segue in that without presupposing what the service might do with that evaluation, two things I think are most likely, and I think they're consistent with discussions that Director Anderson and Assistant Director Pamplin have had with service staff, as well as my own, a potential that the service would look to downlist from endangered to threatened in the western two-thirds of the state. And they could do that either in conjunction with establishing a DPS or by not including the Pacific Northwest into a DPS. And if you look at the criteria for the determination of what constitutes a distinct population segment, the first criteria must be met is one of a discrete population. And the service indicates that that is one that is markedly separated from other populations. So I think that within Washington and what we're seeing in Oregon, right off the bat, it would be a very difficult conclusion to arrive at a markedly separate population from what we're seeing with dispersal of individuals from the Northern Rocky Mountain population, as well as from the population within coastal and central British Columbia. At the national funding level, and Director Anderson touched on this yesterday as well, but the good news is that the Department of Fish and Wildlife has received $100,000 in federal funding. We're hoping that that actually arrives prior to July 1st, and this is a matter of funds being transferred from Washington, D.C. to the Olympia office with a Fish and Wildlife Service. We also have an existing contract in place, and so we're hoping that that is going to streamline this and that those funds would actually arrive sooner than the 1st of July. And these are funds specific to recovery and are intended to be used within the western two-thirds of the state, emphasis on population monitoring. There is the possibility that these funds could be available in subsequent years, and obviously we'll continue to work that. We're also working with the service on the availability of funds that's known as either the Tester funds from Senator Tester from Montana or as the Livestock Demonstration Project funds. These were first appropriated in 2009. They were not appropriated in 10 and then became available again in 11 and 12. This is a competitive grant process whereby there was $1 million available nationally, and we will be submitting a competitive request to obtain funding for non-lethal deterrence, looking at opportunities to work with livestock operators on measures that can deter reduce depredation events or the likelihood of depredation. And my understanding in talking with the service is that the announcement of the availability of the funds as well as the application process is probably still a couple of months away, but we will be bird dogging this and won't miss our opportunity. At the state level of activities, first let's talk about state level activities of interest outside of Washington. On Wednesday, the Fish and Wildlife Service released its 2011 annual report for the Northern Rocky Mountain DPS. And I will make sure that we provide a link to this site through our own website and through our own Wolf page. It's a very informative report provided by the service. And At the risk of potentially getting into a lot of detail, I think the detail is important. And so you'll find that if you give me 30 minutes, I'm probably going to use it. So with that, as a whole, the wolf population for the Northern Rocky Mountain DPS, and again, this is 2011 information, calendar year information, the population within the Northern Rocky Mountains increased 7% above the 2010 level and is now at 1,774 animals within the Northern Rocky Mountain DPS, and that represents 109 breeding pairs. Specifically within Montana, the population increased 15%. And in Idaho, significant information here, the Idaho population in 2011 was actually 31 fewer wolves than in 2010. And I'm going to come back and talk about some of the state hunting seasons in a moment.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Jennings.
Obviously, you're talking about somebody else's research, but the assumption is there are confidence intervals around those numbers. I mean, 31 wolves difference is a pretty precise change.
And so the source of the information that the service collects and then reports through to the annual report is, in fact, the state Fish and Wildlife Agencies. Washington, actually, we fed our information into this process, as did Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. Recognizing that those states have a significant number of monitored, transmitted animals. These are the reports that have been generated by those states relative to those numbers.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Perry.
You mentioned the data from Montana and Idaho. What about Wyoming? That's included in the Northern Rocky Mountain area.
That's correct, and that's also included. I did not have any specific breakdown for Wyoming, and we'll see if we can't find that.
Thank you.
Within that same time period for the 2011 report, there was $310,000 paid out by private and state funds for compensation for damages associated with wolf depredation. And again, this is across the Northern Rocky Mountain DPS. Specifically in 2011, cattle losses were reported as 193. That essentially remained the same, down slightly, 199 in 2010. Sheep losses actually declined from 245 confirmed sheep losses down to 162. And then lastly, on problem wolf removals throughout the Northern Rocky Mountain DPS, and this includes both agency removals as well as public defense property removals in Montana. The lethal removal was 64 wolves. In Idaho, it was 63 wolves. Here is where I do have Wyoming information, and that was 36. And Oregon removed 2 wolves. The total there is 165, although the report actually indicates 166. So someone's math is off by one wolf somewhere, but I'm not able to tell you where that might be. Of the wolves taken during hunting seasons, again, within the 2011 calendar year, and I'll give you a complete update from the 11-12 hunts, but in Montana, during the 2011 time frame, hunters took 121 wolves, and in Idaho, hunters took 200 wolves. As of last week, to kind of wrap up the complete hunt update from those two states, Idaho reports that 10 wolf zones remain open for hunting of 13 total. And to date, a total for the 2011-2012 hunting season, 345 wolves have been taken in Idaho, 243 by hunting and 102 by trapping. in Montana operating all areas under a quota system. Montana has closed their season with a 2011-12 wolf harvest of 166 wolves. They reached quota in their areas of Billings, in the Beartooth Mountains, the Absarokas, and in Bozeman. Those areas were closed. They did not meet quota in southwest Montana, Butte, in the Bitterroots, or throughout the Flathead. Any questions there before I move on to Washington specific?
Commissioner Perry. Commissioner Perry, push your button, please.
Thank you. These population numbers, particularly the total ones that lap over into 2012, that would include the increases would include, I guess what you're saying, in Idaho or in Montana at least, the population increased even with the hunting season. Is that a correct interpretation?
That's correct.
And in Idaho, the population went down by 31, even though they took 345 wolves out of the population.
But at the time of the report of the 31 fewer wolves in 2011, at the time of the report, there were only 200 of their 345 wolves taken that were reported and included in that population information.
Yeah, I guess the only point that I wanted to make sure that I understood is that even with their hunting season taking a significant amount of wolves, the population went down only a very small amount in general terms. Thank you.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I may be ahead of your presentation, but I just wanted to try and link what you just told us about abundances and declines and increases and so on. How does that interact with the abundances of the prey in these two states that you're primarily focusing on?
I don't know that I would be the best one to answer that. I guess that the information that we have is that we work with both of the states relative to what they are reporting relative to their populations of both deer and elk. And I'm not exactly sure how to answer your question, Commissioner Carpenter.
Well, we heard testimony yesterday from the public that, anecdotally certainly, that there was a distinct decline certainly in the elk population in Idaho, and I was just trying to kind of link it to what you're telling me about the increase, decrease in the wolf population. Maybe it's too premature to know that, but I was just trying to connect the dots on that one.
Yeah, no, there's a don't know it off the top of my head. There's an excellent review within the plan associated with those states and their various deer and elk herds. What we do know is that there have been some localized reductions in elk herd populations within portions of Idaho, and Idaho in other areas there have not been impacts reported that have caused population level declines. One of the most frequently discussed area in Idaho is, of course, the Lolo, and that is an area where there was both concerted hunting and trapping effort placed in that area, as well as the use of wildlife services and the removal of 14 wolves by aerial shooting. And so that is an area that they continue to pay a great deal of attention to relative to impacts on elk. And as I indicated, in other areas, there have been little to no impacts on total populations.
Thank you.
Commissioner Caney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's probably one of the key issues that we'll hear over and over and over again from hunters and the public. And as a hunter, and standing around campfires listening to talks about how wolves are decimating elk, you know, I understand that. And yet I also understand that what you see as a hunter in the field isn't necessarily representative of the data. And data is different than what you see in the field sometimes. Even though you aren't seeing animals, they may be there. And I would just like to really emphasize, and maybe even for the next meeting, before this is finalized, because I think we're heading in the right direction. I think we're saying that wolves will repopulate faster than maybe people thought. They will have an effect. But somewhere we got to get the public's impression that the data that we're getting from the other states and the departments of wildlife there is reliable, you know. And so the quicker that information becomes a part of our consciousness and in these decisions, the easier it will be, I think, for the public to accept it. And so that information on the effects on ungulates, I've read so many things and heard so many discussions of, from all aspects, you know, the Lolo experienced losses due to other factors. Wolves were just one of them. Wolves are the entire reason the Lolo population is down. And then there's other areas, you know, so it's really critical that the knowledge we can bring from those other states on ungulate, on wolves' effects on ungulates, is right up front with us, I guess, so that we can hopefully make good decisions, you know. And I think the data is clear in some cases about numbers of wolves increasing. The data is less clear on their effects on the wildlife populations. And so many of our hunters here, that's what's on their mind. That's what they're worried about. So maybe by next meeting we could look into that and bring some of that information forward and get the general population more aware of that information too.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think one of the tools that will be viable for Washington is the trapping opportunity that Idaho has experienced. They had 102 successful trapping cases, I think is what you said. Do you know how many trappers were participating in that program?
I don't know.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, you can go on.
Thank you. Now moving into the state level information specifically for Washington, and I'll try to step up a little bit here. Good news relative to the state funding situation, even though I recognize that we haven't pounded the gavel yet. But currently, within both House and Senate budgets, as well as supported initially by the governor's office, there is a $355,000 authority request for us to be able to utilize. Again, these are existing funds that are from the personalized license plate dedicated account and the orca whale plate that is specifically designed for T&E species management. And so that has been supported throughout the process, and we are hopeful that in the final budget we will see that $355,000 of authority provided to us. In addition to that, there is $50,000 that is included for livestock compensation. Again, this has been included in both House and Senate versions, and we remain hopeful that that would stay intact. We heard not so good news about the carnivore conflict legislation, which is House Bill 2365. And while, again, the budget component is promising, I wanted to touch on the policy elements within the bill that we would be missing or would not be included, since unfortunately that bill did miss cutoff. There's a possibility, albeit slim, that it could be resurrected during special session. But the policy elements of the bill would provide a statutory change to classify the gray wolf as a big game animal. That would not be all that unusual in that currently on that list we have mountain caribou and grizzly bear as an example of protected species that are not hunted. And so that change was included in the policy component of the bill. With that change to big game animal would come an increased penalty for unlawful killing of that species. The other component of the bill included unlawful feeding of wildlife, where that feeding of wildlife created a dangerous situation from both public safety perspective as well as potentially at a population level. It would provide a graduated fine from infraction to misdemeanor based on inadvertent activity versus negligent activity. This is really focused primarily at individuals that have started, unfortunately, feeding black bears. Particularly in Western Washington, this seems to have gained some popularity. And so this does include wolves, bears, and cougars. and that was a policy element included in the carnivore bill. And then lastly, a portion that would provide an individual landowner or operator the opportunity to take a wolf in the act of depredating, causing physical harm, was added on to the department's carnivore conflict legislation. I believe that was Senator Schessler that brought that forward. And as the, even though the bill missed cutoff, as it stood on March the 2nd, that proposal remained within that bill. And then lastly, on the legislative front, Director Anderson did send a letter the beginning of this week to the House and Senate Natural Resource Committee leads, talking about a number of issues associated with the department's and the commission's activities associated with wolf conservation and management, and provided each member a copy of the state's plan. Other activities within Washington. As I mentioned, when I was asked to take lead on the implementation of the Wolf Plan, we started with a number of activities. The first thing was to establish a working group or an implementation team. The backbone of that team consists of the carnivore section within the game division, a number of individuals there. It also includes the game division manager, the wildlife regional program managers with a focus on regions 1, 2, and 3 initially, as well as the enforcement captains from those same regions, with specific discussions that the priority and the activities have filtered down from those respective programs and are being discussed throughout both programs extensively. We have established a weekly meeting with a SharePoint website for information exchange, a task list, an activity monitoring list, and providing the ability for routine updates. Again, our annual report was submitted to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. But then there has been a shift and a great deal of energy within the implementation team on getting ready for a series of depredation investigation workshops, the first of which, or actually all three of which, will occur next week. March 13th in Spokane, March 15th in Ellensburg, and March 16th in Ephrata. And with a relatively short amount of time, we have put together an impressive agenda. The lead, if you will, on this depredation investigation training is the national expert, Carter Niemeyer, from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who will actually be conducting the meat of the workshop.
Steve, before you go on.
Yes.
Commissioner Perry, I think, has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you may start answering the question that I had, but you outlined the Olympia Office organization for the Wolf Working Group, and I wondered how that was going to reflect in field operations. And you're starting into that by the training session, but if you could reflect on that as you go, I would appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
So as I mentioned, the lead for the workshops will be Carter Niemeyer. He'll be doing the majority of the specific training associated with actual depredation investigation. Both we've organized the sessions into sort of pre-site, before you leave your office, before you leave your lab, before you leave the house, versus on-site. One of the things that will be provided and potentially as valuable as listening to the presentation, seeing the discussions, seeing the necropsies, each participant will walk away with a three-ring binder whereby the department has now completed a field investigation manual, not only looking at wolf depredation activity, but looking at all carnivore activity, looking at different carnivore signatures associated with different types of activity, looking at different causes of natural mortality with livestock. We have also completed the depredation claim process. That information will be provided as well. And so we believe that the binder itself is going to be a very significant resource for department staff. And I guess this is where I would indicate that we started with the goal of providing this training to department staff, primarily enforcement program and wildlife program staff, as lead respondents for the agency. We did extend invitations to other entities, and we now have three federal agencies that will be participating. We have six tribes. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is sending staff, and we have several local law enforcement authorities that will also be attending the training. If I can probably touch a little bit more on Commissioner Perry's request for information. So the implementation team, again, led through the game division out of Olympia within the carnivore section led by Dr. Martorello, but that includes a number of field staff that either work directly within the carnivore section, like a Ben Maletsky or a Brian Kurtzen and a Rich Beausoleil, as examples of individuals. But then there is an extension out to the regions through the regional program managers and the district biologists and their support staff as leads within the wildlife program. And on the enforcement side of things, the effort is coordinated through Deputy Sensi in Olympia and then out to the regional captains and then through the detachments and the sergeants. We've also asked enforcement to designate an officer lead within their detachment. And this is really an opportunity to provide somewhat of a one-stop shop approach relative to an officer contact. The officer that's identified as a lead, I'll use Officer Dan Anderson in Northeast Washington, they may not be the responding individual necessarily, but they would be on point for making sure that an officer was on scene coordinated with the biologists. Did that get to your question, Commissioner? The implementation team has also been working to establish an online reporting tool, and this is going to provide a mechanism for data sharing with the public as well as an opportunity for the public to share their information with us. And so if I can... There we go. Little bit of a refresher, and you'll hopefully this will make sense why I've started here. But existing situation within Washington, these are the five confirmed wolf packs in Washington, and the Diamond, Tianaway, and Smackout packs are those where we have successful breeding pairs. Now we want to look at information that's being collected by our district biologists, by our officers. This is information coming in from a variety of sources, other law enforcement entities, individuals of the public. And what you see here, the green areas that are polygons, the polygons are there because that indicates information that's collected from telemetered wolves in the state of Washington. The circular information, either circle green or circle blue, means that we do not have any specific telemetry information. But in the case, in the case of this Smackout pack, that would be the green circle in Northeast Washington, do not yet have an instrumented wolf there, but we do know that that is a confirmed pack. And the information that's being brought in from other sources provided to our biologists and our officers has been cataloged here, and that's where we are now starting to look at suspected packs based on that activity.
Commissioner Perry.
Thank you. I had another question on this. I spend quite a bit of time in Assotin County and know quite a few of the landowners and so forth there. Constantly get people talking about wolves, observations and other experiences with them there. And my question to them always is, do you report it? Do you call the department, you know, and let them know that you've made this observation so we department can collect this information? Almost universally, the answer is no. And that's a lost resource, in my opinion, to the department to not have this information. I guess I was wondering if there's been any thought in how to turn this around, how to get people to have confidence to call the department to, so you can get the information on a map like that, because I think this is a really good idea. But how do you get them to respond?
I just want people to know that Commissioner Perry is not a plant here. I haven't choreographed any
softball
of this.
There.
But no, I do appreciate the question. And so what we'll be talking about is the new online reporting tool. Some of the hesitancy that we hear about goes back to a basic trust issue between individuals and the department. Those types of issues we need to address through on the ground local sessions, local small work groups initially, more presentations, and I'll talk about presentations that have been provided just since the adoption of the Wolf Plan. That's the way that we start to bridge that gap in their willingness to communicate, and I think that the online tool is also going to provide a much easier way for them to sit in the comfort of their own home, not have to interface with someone. Maybe I don't want the social interaction, but I am able to go online and report my observations or my activity to the department. So I think that will also help. If we zoom in just a little bit, we're looking at, green confirmed PAC information with Diamond and Salmo having telemetered individuals. Smack Out will be an area of focus for us when we begin trapping this spring, hoping to have a wolf instrumented there. The area of the Wedge, Boulder Creek, and Ruby Creek, significant amount of wolf activity that is coming in to us, what's being reported, what's being observed. And you'll see that this information, here's just a look at the GPS locations within Diamondback. This is from a single instrumented wolf within the Diamond Pack. Just gives you an idea about the level of information that we're able to collect with those tools in place using GPS technology. And then within Eastern Washington, a look at the Lookout Pack situation as well as the newest pack, Tianaway. You'll remember that within the Lookout Pack, this telemetry data would have come from the instrumented female that unfortunately is no longer alive and has been lost. And so we have no recent telemetry information from Lookout, but we do know we believe it's 2 to 3 individuals that remain within the pack area, but that was not a successful breeding pair last year. And the Tianaway as the newest pack and successful breeding pair just north of Ellensburg. So how do we roll in information from the public?
Commissioner Schmitten has a question.
Steve, if you could go back 2 slides. Yep. There's a suspected pack in the Northern Cascades that I've never seen before. One more slide back, your first one. I was waiting. Okay, see the one in right there in the middle of the Northern Cascades, mostly in Canada? What pack is that?
That's the suspected hosamine pack, and we have been tracking those buggers since 2010 with reports and observations. There actually was an initial trapping effort that was done. It was abbreviated, and we were unsuccessful in capture. But that is activity around hosamine.
Are these also the same wolves that the Colville tribe is reporting?
No. We believe that we have a different set of wolves.
Thank you.
Okay. So what's the connection with what we know, what we're getting, what our biologists and officers are hearing, to what the citizens can provide to us and help us in population monitoring around the state? And so this is a first-time look, first-time unveiled today. This is information that comes into us from the Hunting Washington website. And what we've been able to do is to take that information. These are wolf observations, not numbers of wolves, just number of observations reported. And the level of information that was provided only allowed us to map it at the game management unit level. So these breakdowns are actually the state's game management units. And the legend, I know it's difficult to read, but basically the level of intensity of the color increases increasing number of wolf observations, the lightest shade being a single wolf observation. At the darkest end of coloring, you have anywhere from 8 to 13 different wolf observations. Well, what happens if we take that and we overlay what we know or what we suspect based on our own information? And what you see is a very nice fit in a number of these areas where information coming in from the websites, from Hunting Washington, those observations are matching very well. We do have some outliers, some real interesting observations of wolves or wolf activity, wolf observations south of I-90. And that would be a vicinity in and around Mount Rainier National Park. Quite honestly, that would be very good news relative to the concern that wolves would not get across I-90, or that would be a long time barrier and potentially would delay their expansion throughout the state. At this level of activity, we have higher priorities in other areas regarding our capture operations, but this is one certainly to keep an eye on. Again, in the north central area, as Commissioner Schmitten was talking about, we have an interest in continuing to look at that Hosamine area and the area to the west there with a significant number of wolf observations.
Commissioner Jennings?
Madam Chair, I understand that, well, if I understood what you just said about where you want to prioritize your efforts, it does make sense, at least to me, to make sure we're putting some level of effort in each of the three recovery areas so that we can start documenting packs and or breeding pairs in each one to give us some confidence that we're getting that regional distribution that we're looking for. So understand that the point of you want to put the most energy where you have the most sightings, but don't want to neglect that west side part of the state.
Thank you, Commissioner. This next source of information, a lot of discussion, particularly WoodsWise savvy individual in Northeast Washington, Mr. Jeff Flood. Mr. Flood has been collecting information on his own wolf observations, those reported to him. The dots here, there's a legend that goes with this map. This is also consistent with the map hard copy that Commissioner Don DeShield provided yesterday. This is everything from tracks to scat to howling to pup observations. And the interesting thing I do want to point out here is that for both the areas of activity in the Wedge and in Boulder Creek, Mr. Flood's observations do include pups in both of those areas. And so, again, a nice opportunity to interlay information coming in from the public with what our own information. In this case, it supports, it augments what's coming in from a variety of sources. And this was, I want to point out, the cooperative work between Stevens County. A gentleman by the name of Mark Curtis is their IT lead. Dr. Martorello, Jeff Flood, a number of individuals here that were able to get us to this point in data and information sharing. And I'll come back to some other activities within Stevens County specifically.
Commissioner Duvia?
Well, I might be ahead. You're going to go through more with the interrelationship with Stevens County. Okay, I'll just hold up.
Okay. Okay. Throw this in. This was an observation of a photograph taken of a Tianaway PAC member by a U.S. Forest Service employee, and that was just provided to us recently. And then lastly, to kind of round out this picture relative to the rollout of our online reporting tool, as Director Anderson was talking about this in his brief update yesterday, we actually were able to push the news release button. The site is functional as we speak. If I was a little bit more techy, I would be able to figure out how to launch this thing for you live, but I'm not and I won't. And so this is just the cover shot. It is an interactive website. Individuals can scroll down to a map, specifically place the cursor or place the X on the location where they have observation, track, scat, howling, whatever it might be. There's an opportunity to attach pictures, opportunity to attach video clips. Any information that they might have can be attached to the file and then submitted to the department. So we're excited about the launch of the online tool. I encourage all of you to take a look at that. Okay. Wrapping up, last of a number of items, I wanted to provide short discussion about the status of the recruitments, again, as they relate to initiating field trapping activities for this coming spring. High, high priority for us. We know that last year we were short-staffed. We were not able to spend the amount of time in the field on specific areas that we needed to be successful. And so we have announced the scientific technician positions and two biologist positions. We are currently in the process of establishing interviews for those positions. I think Director Anderson mentioned the level of interest was intense. We had 93 applications for the scientific technician positions and 42 for the two biologist two positions. As I mentioned, that currently in the process of completing the review of those applications, identifying those individuals that are qualified, and then we will be scheduling interviews with an interview schedule set for March 19th through the 21st.
Commissioner Perry.
Thank you. There's been quite a bit of discussion at the Wildlife Committee level about the ability of the trappers that might result from this hiring to actually catch wolves. And I know in my reading and talking to people in Idaho, there was about 100 wolves trapped, but that 100 wolves were trapped by only just a few people. There was a lot of them out there, but catching a wolf in a trap apparently is really difficult. Is that expertise contained in the qualifications for at least one of these position titles?
We have short answers, yes.
Okay.
We have a number of individuals that have direct capture experience, hands-on, doing this in other states like Idaho and Montana currently that are in our applicant pool. So a very qualified group of individuals for both scientific technician and biologist positions.
Thank
Commissioner
you.
Duvia asks for the floor.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'd just like to echo Commissioner Perry's thoughts there, and these are my kind of personal views. Maybe not all the commissioners are the same thing, but we have had avid talks in the Wildlife Committee, and as a commission, we chose to consider college education, but not a limiting factor when we choose someone to head this agency. It's fine to put education as a qualification minimum for a trapper is maybe a little overstreet. And talking to Carter Niemeyer and other trappers in Montana and Idaho, Canada, Alaska, the one thing they've all told me is don't put anybody out there on the job training. And if they don't have physical trapping, not involved with the catching, but the actual trapping, don't put them out there, because all we'll do is educate the wolves not to be trapped. So I think we really need these people more than we need anything else right now. We need the people to catch collar to get those data going, and probably are going to be our first line tool if we have a control problem, is these same people will be the ones we'll need to go trap them so we can move them, utilize them, or whatever is necessary. So that selection process is really important to, I think, to the Wildlife Committee, to see that we continue to progress and get caught up with what we see as the activities on the ground there. So,
Commissioner Caney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious on, as a slide or two back, but it was the citizens reporting. And I was wondering, is there some type of filtering mechanism? And there's one approach where you could just take all reports in and, mm-hmm. and go with it, that it could also lead you astray, I guess, if there was, you know, depending on the type of sighting, the type of people that were putting the information in, you know, was it a coyote or a wolf? And I guess, are you just going to go more with the approach of, well, we'll just take it all in and see how it shakes out? Or is there any screening process, I guess, in right. that citizen reporting?
for this process, the online reporting tool. Lots of discussion about this question. The online reporting tool provides any individual an opportunity to report what they believe to be a wolf observation. There is a process then that the biologists, that the officers will use in order to go through that information to then say, okay, first of all, this requires a response, an immediate response. Others are not of a nature whereby they may need to be followed up immediately. There may be questions with some that we would want to follow up with the reporting party. So the initial launch is not attempted to be a filter. The filtering will occur through the agency's response and information assessment. We're not attempting to throw out anything.
Okay.
Commissioner Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair. Similar vein, the Citizens Wolf Report. How are we going to inform the public about getting this out? A press release? Frankly, the sooner we can get it out, the more improvements we'll receive in data collection. So that, have you thought about that?
We actually sent the news release out yesterday, and I took four calls yesterday, including from NPR and three other two radio stations and one newspaper. We're also prepared to have handouts. We're just coming up on our outdoor show season, Bighorn Show in Spokane, one of the biggest. And we now have a one-page simple handout for someone that lets them know that the online reporting tool is available. It's got the link to it, how to get there. It's got the 877 phone number on the top, and I'll be there signing.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually pulled up the website and I'm looking at it now.
Great.
And, you know, just one piece of feedback. You've got both the phone number and the email as required fields. I would think maybe the phone number might not be a required field. If somebody's reporting an observation, they may not want you to call them at home. They can deal with an email. And if you can't follow up with them, that's just one more potential observation. It looks like a really nice site. It does let people upload any pictures or other video files to help verify. I think the approach that you're taking of taking any and all observations and then is the appropriate one and then looking at any sort of documenting information or 17 other people reported the same type of thing gives you some feedback as opposed to having some sort of a screening tool that says we'll only look at it if you have this type of a pack of information. So,
Commissioner Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would totally agree with Commissioner Jennings' statement. I know, like I say, in Sauten County, where I spend a lot of time, people are highly skeptical of any government, not just department, but any government organization, and they're often hesitant when you question them about, well, why don't you report it? Well, I don't want to get involved. You know, I don't want people calling me, and so on and so forth. So I think Commissioner Jennings' point is really a strong one, that it needs to be as simplified as possible, and the fact you've set up a system where they don't necessarily have direct contact with the department when they make a report, I think is really a really a strong one, and I think more people will take advantage of it that way. But how you get the information to them that this stuff is out there in a rural community like that, I'm not too sure. I've tried; it hasn't done a lot of good. But
Commissioner Caney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to be clear, too. I agree with Commissioner Jennings and Commissioner Perry 100%. I was just curious because in past efforts, there's always been this credibility of the mm-hmm. of the report, you know, and I think it is important that people that are out there, that are in the woods, that are out, you know, get a chance to say, I saw this, or send a picture of a track or whatever it is, you know. And I teach in our school system, and I have kids coming to me with pictures of wolf tracks off the reservation, you know, with a ruler there that shows they're 6 inches long, and I go, not bad. And so I think it is important, and I think I recommend or highly appreciate the effort you've done on this, and it gives people a chance to feel that they're involved, they're being heard, so I think it's great.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Could you go back to Jeff's sure. slide? And I make the comments, too. I think that part of that lack of communication or mistrust or avoidance of communication has mainly been because we haven't readily accepted. We've kind of challenged people's ability to identify a wolf, and I think the fact that we can accept what they tell us and then we can use our management filters to qualify and screen those kind of things out. But one of the benefits of this map kind of situation is that Jeff and Steve and Nate have worked with Stevens County and developed this program along, and they've really expedited it and done a tremendous work here in the last 3 or 4 weeks to get this thing up and going. But one of the future benefits will be we'll be able to also see cougar and bear differentiated by different colored dots. We'll be able to pull up a permit grazing area and see how many sightings, trackings, observations, whatever, within a permit area. So if we have issues in a certain area, we can zero in with different map boundaries and stuff so that we can begin to really try to manage the movement controls and where we have problems for it. And I know the whole department with Nate and Steve have really been trying to get those communications lines built back up. And Steve mentioned just one that he's going to spend 4 days at the Bighorn Show, but Steve will probably be our new most famous TV star and radio host guest and speaker, I hope, in the next 30 days, because we need to make sure and we win over the people to participate in this, because this will enable us to keep up with the growth of the wolf population more than any other tool we got. This enabled us to have thousands of people with boots on the ground helping us track, see, control what's going for us so that we can make better management decisions. So I think this communication tool, if it's accepted, will enable us to achieve what we want on our plans. And if without it, we're going to be struggling to keep up. So I take my hats off to Steve and the department for getting this thing going. It's a great job.
Okay. My mom says I have a face for radio. A number of other items, and perhaps following off on Commissioner Dubia's comments, specific to Stevens County, with Commissioner Dubia's assistance, we've also launched a livestock working group with the president of the Stevens County Cattlemen Association. Currently, it includes three different members. We have interest from a fourth joining that group, just really initiating a dialogue in talking with those individuals from Northeast Washington. Specifically, we have an operator right now within the Wedge area here looking at the suspected pack, Laurier and Malo, Washington, right near the Canadian border there. And I do want to relay the story. Not only is it coordination with Stevens County, but give you a sense of the on-the-ground activities. We had heard through Commissioner DeShiel and through Commissioner Dubia about one of the livestock operators that actually had attended our Colville meeting that was having problems with wolves in and around a calving area. Report didn't come into the department. We heard through commissioners. And so we immediately followed up and talked with the individual, showed up at their house, a biologist and an officer, asked if the individual was interested in assistance in the situation, opportunity to look at what was going on. And in this case, the operator had done a number of very good things, starting by bringing in the cows into a confined calving area very close to the house so that he could keep an eye on them. He had also started his own attempt at fladry. And I say attempt only because his tools available included red flagging tape. And literature suggests that there's a maximum width that's most effective. There's a distance from the ground that's most effective. There's a spacing that's most effective. And so we immediately started a dialogue with him and asked if he was interested in assistance with additional fladry. He indicated he was. We've been on site now three subsequent times hanging fladry at this operator's ranch. We have also confirmed the fact that wolves have actually been within the calving pen. When we first got on site, the electric wire that the operator had placed was too high, and wolves had actually approached the calving area and gotten under the wire and then probably got hit in the rump by the hot wire. That pushed them the rest of the way into the calving pen.
Okay.
Once they got there, they decided that that wasn't too pleasant, and they didn't care for the fladry that was hung up, even though it could have been improved. No calves were harmed, and the wolves, it was obvious that they had spent a lot of time trying to get out rather than harming any calves. We are watching that situation intensely. The operator is glad to have us on site. One of the things that he's brought to our attention now is because of the extremely small area that he's operating within, as the weather warms, the soil conditions are going to get pretty nasty, and he's concerned for potential diseases breaking out within his cows and calf operation. So we will see if we can't work with him on expanding the area. We are actively pursuing commercial fladry. We're establishing kits for non-lethal tools like fladry, turbo fladry, the potential for rag or noise-emitting boxes, and my goal is to have a kit of non-lethal tools available in Regions 1, 2, and 3 immediately, recognizing that we're right in calving season. Region 3 had a similar experience with an operator in the Tianaway Pack. There were wolf observations. We met with the landowner. They did not need fladry assistance. They indicated that they were not concerned. They had not seen the wolves recently, and there hadn't been any activity in the area where that individual was calving. And that was a much, much smaller operation. So just an idea of boots on the ground and following up and being responsive with folks that are managing wolf issues right now.
Steve, before you go on.
Yes.
Just a comment. There is a lot of skepticism out there about the effectiveness of non-lethal measures. And I think it's going to be important for us to collect data that is compelling, persuasive, either way. In other words, be honest with the experience that we have with non-lethal measures, because otherwise we're not going to earn that trust that we need. So an important part of this is not just monitoring how many wolves, but monitoring the impacts and the conflicts and the outcome of our measures that we take.
Thank you. In that case, the issue of fladry was discussed. Commissioner Caney has been working with one of these operators as well relative to extending invitations for range riders. We have followed up with those discussions. I think we have an opportunity now that we have an understanding that there's a known individual of interest. We can't simply show up with a range rider that's not a known commodity to an operator. Concerns for do they know livestock, do they know the ranch? If they push them from this area, do they know that they're going to disappear into this area that we have a hard time rounding them up again, those kinds of issues. So, again, dialogues to continue. I would envision many more of these small livestock working groups and would look to assistance from any of the commissioners as we move to develop those throughout Regions 1, 2, and 3 initially. Relative to additional activity in Stevens County, we have completed the 911 contract with Stevens County. We now are 911 dispatched there, thanks to Chief Bjork, Captain Wharton, Sheriff Allen. We have been able to put that together, and that is now functional. We had some software issues that we dealt with, but we now have 911 dispatch in Stevens County. We followed that up with a direct meeting with Stevens County Sheriff and Undersheriff and outlined, even though they are attending the depredation investigation trainings next week, we had a preview, if you will, and had an opportunity to sit down and have a dialogue with Stevens County Sheriff. There have been a number of staff, all the way down from the director on down to district biologists, that have made presentations to various groups since the adoption of the Wolf Plan. This is one thing that the history of presentations and fairs and sportsman shows, inevitably those are the kinds of things that wind up being cut in reductions. And we have a history here of going back and forth on understanding the significance and the importance of those kinds of activities, but being in significant financial binds where those tend to be somewhat of an easier cut. No cuts are easy, but those tend to be an easier cut to take. Pendulum has swung again, and I think that we're now understanding the benefit, or the bang, if you will, for those kinds of presentations. So those will continue. Just a minimum estimate since the adoption of the Wolf Plan, just based on what I am familiar with, we have a minimum of 12 different presentations that have been presented by, again, everywhere, anyone from district biologists, officers, regional program managers, captains, the director. The assistant director has an upcoming presentation with the Washington State Bow Hunters, all talking the Wolf Plan. I promise I'm finishing up. Let's see. I mentioned the establishment of the field kits. I mentioned the components within the work that's been completed on the depredation investigation protocol and training and the damage claim forms. I guess I would just finish with, again, the emphasis at this point, post-successful workshops will be field deployment for the newly hired staff and looking at information that we have now collected and establishing priorities for where we send those trapping crews to initiate trapping operations for the purposes of collaring. So,
great.
I hope that was helpful.
Just one comment from me. I think it's appropriate for us to emphasize our interest and commitment in gaining the trust of those communities that are most nervous about the recolonization of our state by wolves. So we've been talking about that a lot, the concerned livestock producers, the concerned hunters. What are we doing to maintain our connections with the conservation community, which is also a concerned stakeholder group?
That's an excellent question. And within, I believe, a day or two of Director Anderson talking about the organizational changes within the agency, talking about a Wolf Plan implementation lead and approaches to that, I was on a conference call with Conservation Northwest. We kind of overviewed the situation, made sure everyone had appropriate contacts, a walkthrough of what we were thinking about, talking about upcoming programs, the Range Rider program and activities, the idea about these local community workshops. So we launched that discussion within literally 24 hours of changes that were being identified to start to address some concerns or some reactions that there may have been to the changes that were made. And so far those communications have been very positive.
Great.
So, okay. And that will continue. The only other item I didn't mention was that we've also initiated an MOU with the Colville Tribe, and their policy lead and I have sat down, and we have an initial bullet list of the items that would be contained within an MOU that would cover both on-reservation activities as well as North Half activities between the department and the Colville Tribe. My understanding is that they would like to bring at least the list of items that we're thinking about including in the MOA to the Tribal Council on March the 20th. So then we'll have a green light to move forward to specifics.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I'd just like to thank Steve for his presentation and the director and Nate. As the commission has kind of conveyed in the past, and I want to report to the full commission that we have tried to stress the urgency and the importance of the wolf situation in terms of the department's future. And the department is responding appropriately and quickly, and we are starting to, in the northeast corner, unfortunately, we are in the management plan almost because the situations are developing fast, but the department is gearing up and has responded appropriately and quickly. So that's a good job. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. Okay, let's... Well, we're taking a lot more time than we had planned on the agenda, but this is a very, very, very important topic to us. the interest level is high, so we didn't allocate it the right amount of time on the preformed agenda. I'm willing to take advice from the commission about whether we should take a break or should we just jump into the position statement. Commissioner Jennings?
I'm just thinking out loud, but looking at where we are on the agenda and the fact that we've already used up sort of all the time, and you did a really nice job, Steve, of using all 60 of your 30 minutes. Maybe what we can do is just take the current version of the draft and put it out there and really have that discussion, you know, on our conference call and not really do a lot of work with it today. I mean, we don't have copies for the general public to look at. We don't, walking it through on the screen helps the folks in the audience, but not everyone else. So maybe we don't want to spend a lot of time walking through it. I'm just thinking out loud, but I'm just trying to look at the time frame.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I totally agree with Commissioner Jennings. I think we've got the balance of the week to review the rewritten document and perhaps discuss it on our conference call and resolve it. I think from my perspective, I'd like to hear from the public.
Okay.
The public testimony and that have been waiting here patiently and then move forward.
Okay. Any other comments? Any contrary views? That looks like that makes sense. We can defer the commission conversation about the revised draft. Tammy, would you circulate the latest version and put a link on our website so everyone can see it? And we'll have that as a central item on the next conference call agenda. So, and we can send in comments to the commission office if you have any. That's next Friday. Yes. Okay.
Madam
well, that
Chair,
saves us. Director Anderson?
Just a question on I did have one suggested edit I wanted to put out there. Should I just email that to the commissioners?
Yes. Is that, yes. Okay. We will, and that makes it easier if everyone can see it in writing. And for all of you, I will have some additions to propose for this revised draft as well. Just to give everyone a heads up, I'm interested in proposing that we add some language on our view of translocation and the unique challenges of implementing translocation, given the divisiveness that might stimulate. And there was a few other, but that was one of my major additions that I wanted to ask we consider. Okay, let's move into open public input right now. I think we, Commissioner Jennings?
Maybe from a process perspective, if individual commissioners looking at this, just like you did, identify either general subject areas or comments, we might want to get those on the record now so people understand what the changes might be or if other commissioners haven't. You said you had a couple more issues, and I'm thinking from spending 5 or 10 minutes now might really help the conversation on Friday as opposed to trying to bring them up. You know, I certainly find that face-to-face communication is much more efficient than over the phone when trying to understand things. So,
yes, that is true. So does anyone else have major concepts to propose we address in the position statement that we can give everyone a heads up on? Commissioner Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know quite how to say this. In terms terms of the position paper, I think we've mentioned a lot of things in there, and I guess what I want to say is that I think we need to mention the potential management that occurs out there. But on the other hand, we're a policy-setting body, and I don't want to get into micromanaging how the department does or what they do with this. I think we need to generate some guidelines in terms of management, and I think the current draft does that fairly well. I'm not really complaining about adding translocation to it, but I just want to caution everybody that I don't think we really want to get into a micromanagement situation. Thank you.
Dr. Anderson?
Just as a heads up, proposed modifications for your consideration will be in the beginning on the bottom of page 4 in the section that is entitled Begin Development of a Post-Delisting Management Plan.
So line number?
Line number 119 mm-hmm. on page 4, Begin Development of a Post-Delisting Management Plan. I would be offering some suggested language modifications on line 123 and lines 127 and 128 that are found on the top of page 5.
Okay. Others? Commissioner Jennings?
I just want to say I take responsibility for any sort of omissions, typographical errors, lack of capitalization. We pulled this together fairly quickly, and I was the last one to actually touch the document, so I don't want to have other people tainted with any errors or omissions.
We can continue to do some wordsmithing and grammatical corrections and typos, et cetera. Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I don't know exactly the appropriate point to have this discussion or exactly my wording, but basically on line 102, it'd probably fall under the impact on livestock productions. One of the issues that's come to light, and as we put their plan together, we knew we were going to have to be adaptive and going forward. And the confirmation of livestock kills is one of the areas that's that needs to be discussed. And for example, we highly suspect that we have at least 36 head of cattle that are probably gone because of wolves in the northeast corner, but we really don't have the confirmation of seeing or finding them or all that kind of thing. So we've been working with the department, and we're trying to come up with another way to have an understanding of wolf impact so that we can confirm a problem, a wolf situation, and provide support to relieve that problem on the cattleman without maybe exactly finding the carcass. A lot of these animals disappear on their permitted grounds and will probably never be found. If you don't get to them, usually within a matter of days, there's probably little left but a few pieces of bone. All the predators are on them, and they're often in ravines or brushed country, covered over, maybe even buried by other predators. So we need to take a look at maybe a second phase or a separate criteria to use that we can document, substantiate, and come to a logical, rational conclusion that we have a situation that needs to have some protection. So I think we're working on that language, but we'll modify it somewhere and put it out for discussion.
Commissioner Jennings?
I think the point's a valid one from how do we implement the process of determining it. I guess I question whether or not that's really, that level of detail is appropriate in a overall strategic position paper, so that we can talk about that. But from a, you know, guidance as opposed to the language that sort of sets the overall picture for moving forward.
Yeah, my point is to just to make sure we reinforce that this is an adaptive process that we're looking at, and this would be in that final area that we will be looking at ways to improve and step forward, but the discussion will come and that language will be later.
Right, and I do, and although there's lots of words and it's a seven-page document, line 169 does say embrace an adaptive approach to wolf recovery management and associated public communications. And I think that in part was trying to capture that adaptive management that we expect to have, that will have to happen for us to learn from ourselves and others is how we're moving forward.
Yeah, and all we're trying to do now is just give each other a heads up about the topics rather than debate them to a conclusion. So, Commissioner Caney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I said before, I really like the approach of this position paper for the commission. In reading the final draft, there may be a couple places where I would just, it's wordsmithing, but it can be important, like on line 75, where it says, page 3, certain percentage of the population accepted limits on wolves if they cause declines in deer and elk. Well, they're going to cause declines in deer and elk. That's what they do. And so do cougars and so do bears. So it's more of a question of an unacceptable effect on an ungulate population. So just some small things that I think basically a conservation community could look at this and say, okay, that's reasonable. You know, we might just want to, I'll probably look at it in terms of some of those words that would make a difference.
Okay. just to clarify, that is the language of the survey. So that was just direct. That's the question that was asked. That's the percentage that responded in that way. Okay, a few more on my part then. Just heads up. I also needed a conversation about whether we want to put a mandate in this position statement to the agency regarding the immediate need to develop a post-delisting management plan. And I think that's what Director Anderson was raising. The timing of the development of that management plan, do we address that or not? And another one, the revision, which I like a lot in general, did remove a statement about change the statement about the conditions of our elk herds in our state. And I would like us to revisit how we would describe the condition of our elk herds, because I think it's important to point out that we're not swimming in elk. We are not in a situation in which the elk herds are abundant everywhere and they're above objectives, and we need to get rid of some of these excessive ungulates. So I'd like to see if we could come up with an accurate depiction of elk herd status. And probably one of my biggest desires one of the most important things is to tackle this question of, do we try to set, or do we direct the agency, either one, to try to set a population upper and lower objective, so that within that optimum population range of wolves, we know when we're starting to get too close to the bottom, the lower objective, and when we're starting to get towards that upper objective, and adjust our management aggressiveness to reflect where we are in our optimum population range. So I want to have a conversation about, do we ask the agency to set an upper and lower population objective for wolves? Translocation, another topic that we could discuss is our relationship with the federal government. We've already said we want to retain or do everything we can to that allows the federal agency to defer management to us. I think there may be a number of years before that happens. And during that time period, I'd like us to discuss how we would like to see our relationship with the, I should just cut to the chase. There's concern that the federal government might take actions without consulting the state sufficiently within federal lands, which I don't know that they would do, but the concern is out there. And I've been asked by local legislators to include a statement in this position statement that makes it clear that we would appreciate if the federal government would consult with us if they intend to do any translocation of wolves from federal land to federal land. Let's see. And finally, maybe it might be a good idea to talk a little bit more when we are on our conference call about the question of how far do we expect livestock owners to go in exhausting all of the potential non-lethal options. I think there has to be some sort of reasonableness standard, and that doesn't get you very far in clarity, but I just like to bring up that topic. Commissioner Jennings?
I do think we're into a little bit of a discussion now. It makes sense to me to have a little bit of this discussion now as opposed to the conference call. So if I can react to a couple things. One is your concept of an upper limit for the population. I was struck yesterday looking at the population management plans for bear and cougar, and that seemed to me the appropriate approach that we'd be looking at, figuring out what the unit size is for breaking the three regions into subunits and deciding what is an appropriate population objective for each of those subunits, which is how we're doing it now for cougar and bear. I see that being ecologically much more appropriate than talking about upper limits. Upper limit says to me cap, and it doesn't really address, it raises concerns from the wording, and you didn't use the word cap, that's just how I translated what you said. Whereas if we're setting it up at a discrete geographic area, what are our population objectives for that, for the wolves, relative to human conflict, livestock conflict, and ungulate interactions, it is, I think, you know, based on how we've done it in the past, the right approach. What I thought we tried to capture in this document was on page 127, line 127, where we're directing the department to develop a population management plan for wolves and try to capture that concept that I thought I heard you say earlier into that phrase. And if that didn't go far enough, then obviously we can come up with some additional language. But
I think we just need to have a debate, because I see some problems with the more general approach that you're suggesting of just asking the agency to come up with a population management objective. That doesn't give a lot of guidance. But, again, we're not here to debate this into a conclusion. So right. Let's keep talking.
The second point was about the when do livestock owners, where are they able to move to lethal take as an appropriate response? And I thought we dealt with that pretty well in the existing recovery plan, where we actually provided them that option pretty darn early, as soon as the department recognizes that either the department can't respond with lethal take if needed, then that quickly transfers over to through a permit or process that we didn't quite define, but it's up to the department to let that happen. So to me, that it's almost like I thought we'd already dealt with that question.
Commissioner Perry.
Thank you.
I guess I would again, these are guidelines. This is a position statement and guidelines to the department, and I think we're getting, in my opinion, I guess we're getting well into micromanagement, and I think a lot of these things are somewhat covered, at least in the document now, at least our view of them, and again, I wouldn't be opposed to discussing these things, but again, I don't really want to get into micromanagement, and I'd like to give the department as much flexibility to deal with wolf problems as possible, because every situation is going to be different out there, and the more you put limits on what the situation might be or how the department needs to respond, you set up situations where it isn't going to fit. And so I think it needs to be maybe a little more general in what we're talking about. That's my opinion, but again, I'd be willing to discuss these things.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a brief comment on, I don't like the micromanaging, but I think your point is well taken that, and we're running into it. I think as Steve Brzanger pointed out, we have a situation where we have a cattleman that's in desperate probable incidents going to happen. So if we would give him a permit to protect those stock if he caught them in the act before the act happened, at the same time doing all the non-lethal things to discourage and haze or whatever to discourage it happen, it isn't really clear. I don't think that we can provide a lethal take, but we also do the non-lethal process at the same time so that we're not having to go through XYZ non-lethal process before we can do anything lethal. So I think that's a gray area that needs to be clarified, and it's a particular confusing point for the cattlemen. They think they have to do ABC before they can protect their livelihood. So I think that's a viable.
Director Anderson.
I don't want to get in the middle of this particular debate, but I would point out that you provided us a fair amount of flexibility in the management plan. And frankly, from as you hopefully you took a takeaway from Steve Pazanger's presentation is we're on our way. Train's left the station. We're implementing the plan. We're taking a number of steps that weren't described or explicitly in the plan, but we've made a lot of changes internally, staffing changes, reorganizational changes with where the plan lies, where the implementation responsibility is. We put it out in the regions. Some of the things that you're debating or discussing right here, we've already left, right? You know, we're already on the ground. We're already doing this stuff into the, you know, you're the policy body. We'll respond to your direction. We're on our way. And frankly, I don't think all of the things that we have done you would have thought of to put in the document, nor do I think they need to be in the document. So I guess I'm maybe adding and supporting Commissioner Perry's perspective here on how deep you get into the detail and the direction and the guidance in this document. You need to rely on our expertise and our ability to implement your policy guidance and figure out the right way within the tools that we have and the resources we have to do it. And frankly, it would be difficult for you as commissioners to know how to do that because of the complexity of the agency and how it's funded and where our resources are deployed and where our options are from a staff management perspective and redeployment opportunities and making sure that we stay within the parameters of of the position statements or position descriptions that they have, and all those kinds of things go into considering how we move forward and implement your policy that's described, I think, pretty well in the Conservation and Management Plan.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Well, I just want to comment on what Commissioner Perry and Director Anderson just said. You know, very simply, we're supposed to be a policy board, and we're not supposed to micromanage, in my view. And I go to the tail end of line 174 here under ongoing concerns. It's if facts on the ground indicate that the Wolf Recovery Plan is not achieving its key goals, the commission will revisit the approach. So it's an open-ended program and policy, and it's going to be evolving for a number of years, I think, at a minimum. So as Phil said, the train's out of the station. I think this will be some adaptive management, to say the least, and I don't think we, frankly, I don't know how much we can critique it at this point until we get a little farther down the road. So those are my comments.
Thanks. Okay, very good. Any other heads up? Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, I would second my colleague.
Okay. Commissioner Mencken?
And I would third that.
It's not a motion.
My concern is also, if you begin to narrow the gauge on this, you're going to constrain yourself in the future. I think this has to be a policy statement document. And if you get too down and dirty on it, I think it's going to hurt our ability to make changes in the future.
Mm-hmm. Has to be kept at the policy level. Got the message. Commissioner Perry?
I'd just like to make one more comment, and I meant to mention this before, and I didn't, and the director brought it up. I think that we do have a lot of expertise in the staff, they're, with the statement we heard this morning, they are just bending over backwards to make this thing happen now, soon, not 6 months, not a year, but right now. And I think we ought to give them credit for that, they are reacting to our position that we want them to get going soon. I was really impressed with that presentation this morning and what they're covering. And it just seems to me like the more we add into this thing, it sort of, and that was brought up in a conversation this morning, we're sort of taking that initiative away from the department. And I think we ought to be pushing it on to them, and they're doing a really good job right now. So the more we add to this, it sort of detracts from that relationship. I don't know whether I've made myself clear, but.
Okay. Wow, we had a conversation.